Beth Allison Barr lives in Waco, Texas, and she is what's popularly called a born-again Christian. A Southern Baptist who was raised evangelical, married a pastor, and had two children. And if that makes you think you know something about Beth Allison Barr, well, I should also tell you she's a feminist professor of medieval history at Baylor University and author of a book that is not winning her many friends in the evangelical world. It's called The Making of Biblical Womanhood: How the Subjugation of Women Became Gospel Truth. Blanket apology in advance. I grew up secular, so a lot of the world that you're describing is not so familiar to me. But I think I wanted to start with what you love about your church and your faith.
Oh.
What you loved about it growing up.
Oh, yes. So I still identify in faith. I'm still married to a Baptist pastor. Mm-hmm. So in fact, I'll be at church tonight. And so I think just from that, it shows that there's something more than just the negative parts that are out there and the problems that we see. And in fact, I don't think I would have written The Making of Biblical Womanhood if I didn't love my faith. Hmm. I have very fond memories of the church that I grew up in and the church that I still am in today, but that doesn't make me blind, or that doesn't make me unable to recognize the problems that are in it.
And thinking specifically about the problems in the church and the church's attitude toward women, when would you say, I mean, you grew up in your church. At what point did you become aware, do you think, that boys and girls were getting mixed messages, that there were very different gender roles and visions of what it would mean to be a little girl and growing up to be a woman? At what point were you aware of that?
You know, I know now as a historian that my experience was at the very beginning of the hard gender shift. And so I actually remember when there was a shift in our church. When I first grew up, I remember when I was smaller, I remember women being more present and women being more active. And so I remembered women being more visible. And so it was really in my early high school years that I began to notice more of a shift. And
I didn't realize there had been a very deliberate, determined shift. What happened?
There was a shift. I didn't know it at the time. I was a teenager in the late 80s, early 90s. And what I didn't know is that about 10 years earlier, when I was 4 years old, there had been something called a conservative resurgence in the Southern Baptist world. And the goal of the conservative resurgence was to take over the Southern Baptist seminaries, as well as begin to take over the churches and start pushing them more towards what they called a biblical understanding of gender, which was reinforcing male authority and female subordination. And this starts trickling into the churches. And in fact, in the 1990s, we start seeing a wave of publications coming out that start reinforcing what we call this biblical womanhood, including John Piper and Wayne Grudem publishing their book, Recovering Biblical Manhood and Womanhood. And that really just, the movement exploded after that point.
It's such a fascinating both history and concept to me, because I didn't grow up with this idea. So even the phrase biblical womanhood was new to me. Tell me what's subsumed in it.
Yeah, no, that's a very good question. So I've gotten a lot of criticism for how I define biblical womanhood. I'm not exactly sure why, because it's pretty much the way it is defined. It is that God created gender roles for men and women. Men's gender roles are to lead. Women's are to follow male leadership. And that's pretty much it. That's what biblical womanhood is. And if I can quote Dorothy Patterson, whose name probably isn't familiar to you, but she is the wife of one of the major movers in the conservative resurgence, and her husband is connected to Paul Pressler, who's the judge in Texas who has all of the sex abuse scandals against him right now. But she wrote a really significant book for pastors' wives. And one of the things she said in it is that a pastor's wife, the job was to hold the ladder for her husband to climb. And in some ways, that kind of is the image of biblical womanhood, that you hold the ladder. You hold the family together. You hold the ladder so that your husband can be successful.
Well, the other really problematic aspect of this, and you write, is women are not allowed to lead in church. They're not allowed to be pastors.
Yes.
You were told not to teach. Am I right?
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah. I think thinking from an outside mindset, I, of course, was trained in women's history at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. So I was, you know, I had this very disjointed world where on the one hand, I was an evangelical pastor's wife. And on the other hand, I was in the women's studies program at Chapel Hill. And so it was this really interesting. So I kind of saw both sides of the coin. I saw what it looked like on the outside. And then I also saw what was going on the inside. And I think that helped me understand how strange it was to make an argument that women, simply because of their gender, because of their bodies, that they are not able to teach men. And I was able to see the danger behind that. I mean, if you tell men that there's something about women that they cannot learn from them, what is that telling men about women? And what is that telling women about their own worth? If they are told that by design of God, their voices don't matter as much as men's voices.
Your book, The Making of Biblical Womanhood, How the Subjugation of Women Became Gospel Truth. First of all, I imagine that just that title, you've gotten some pushback on that.
Oh, yeah.
Has it caused a, I don't know, kerfuffle in the SBC?
Oh, yes. I would say I'm a persona non grata with many in the SBC. It was funny when I was in the archives in Nashville, I requested to see some files, and I received pretty immediate rejections. They would not let me in to go see their files.
Interesting.
My name precedes me in this, and I know that my name has been in a conversation of a lot of what's going on. They were unable to ignore me, which I'm really glad about. But at the same time, I don't think any of them were willing to listen to what I had to say. And in fact, since The Making of Biblical Womanhood has come out, what we have seen in the Southern Baptist Church is we have seen even harder stances on women, including this: not only can women not be senior pastors, but women can't carry any pastoral title. Now, that's sort of what's moving forward. It's called the Mike Law Amendment, and it's that women should not have any sort of pastoral in their title. That is about as hard line as one can get. I think the next step moving forward from that is this idea that to be biblical woman, that women should not even work outside the home. I mean, I think this is kind of the natural progression of where this is going if you subsume women completely under male leadership.
Can we talk some about the harm that letting patriarchal attitudes like this persist in any institution?
Yes.
Because it's one thing to say to limit women's roles, but when you begin to constrain any set of people, it's a short walk from subjugation to submission to actual harm. There's been a big sex abuse scandal in the SBC, in the evangelical movement, as there has been in other churches as well. Where are things right now with there's a hashtag Church Too movement, I think.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And that's one of the arguments that I make in The Making of Biblical Womanhood. It's one that's also gotten me a lot of pushback. And I argue that when you teach that there is something about any group of people that simply because of the way they are born, that makes them worthy of being under the authority of someone else, that is dangerous, that it's a dangerous attitude. And in fact, that's exactly what we have seen. We have seen a system that has built on male authority and male power and has been trained to protect that male authority and male power, which means that when there are problems, and because there aren't any women at the table, there aren't any women who are involved in these higher decision makings, that when there is a problem, the goal of the church is to protect the pastor and to protect the men in leadership instead of to protect the victims. And there was in the Guidepost Solutions report, which is the firm that was hired to investigate the sex abuse scandal in the Southern Baptist Convention, there is this really horrific letter in there where Paige Patterson, who's one of the architects of the Southern Baptist Convention, he writes telling a church how to make sure that if they are sued for any sort of sex or child abuse, that they will win that case. And so the concern is not about being sued for this. The concern is about how to win the case. And so he tells them to bring in an outside firm, even if they don't agree with them, just to do like an hour training module on how to protect your children and how to protect against sex abusers. And he said, if you do that, then that will help. That'll go a long way in the court to protect you from being sued. That whole attitude just shows the problem with this, that the goal is about protecting systems, protecting people in power.
Protecting men.
Protecting men instead of protecting the victims, the women, and the children, and anyone actually who is not in that power. It's not all men. You know, as we know, patriarchy privileges only some men. And so anyone who's outside of that privileged power is not protected in this system.
Well, and then women's faith got sort of held up. There were women who were told they should just work on forgiving their rapists.
That's exactly right.
Which seems to me like such a perversion of a woman's faith.
When The Making of Biblical Womanhood first came out, I had a lot of people who were in the church that we were in who reached out to me, and I had a lot of really good conversations. A lot of them were happy to know just what had actually happened, et cetera. But I remember this one woman, and it really surprised me. And she reached out to me, and the first thing she asked me, she said, you know, Beth, I just have to know, I just have to make sure you've forgiven them. Before anything else, that was the question. I was like, yep, this is the world. This is the world where what matters most is not the harm that has been done, but if the people who the harm has been done to, they have to have the right attitude. They have to forgive. I mean, it's so damaging, but it is, that is what we are taught. And I'll put myself out there. That is what we are taught.
There is a hashtag out there, hashtag ex-evangelical. I'm curious, what do you say to a woman who comes to you and says, I read your book, I can't do this anymore, I'm leaving the church?
Yeah. I mostly just tell her I'm sorry, that I am sorry for what has happened to her. I'm sorry for the experiences that she's had, and that I, you know, my hope inside is that maybe one day she might be interested in returning, not to that church, but to a faith, a different sort of faith. But at the same time, I totally understand why she's walking away. People ask me all the time why I didn't walk away. And I think part of it's because
it was going to be my next question.
Was it? Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I'll preempt you on that. I mean, part of it's because I'm a historian. And I know that the Christianity that we see in modern American evangelicalism is a very small blip in the long river of Christian history. And I work with people whose faith is deep and strong, and all the way back to the very earliest moments of Christianity. And I read their faith and how it makes them better, that they believe that God is calling them something to bigger and better than this world. And it enables me to know that God is bigger than white American evangelicalism. And so I think that that is part of it. You know, I've never had a faith crisis through this whole thing. What I have had is a crisis with how people have portrayed the faith. And so I think that's where my beef is. But as for my faith itself, being a historian has helped me stay strong in it.
That's beautiful. Near the end of your book, you say that when you finish classes, finish teaching, you often end with kind of a benediction. What do you say to your students, and what would you say to us, to our listeners?
Yes, yeah, it's sort of funny how I ended my book with that. But what I always say to my students is I say, go be free. And that really is what I want women in the evangelical church, as well as beyond. I mean, patriarchy hurts all of us. And patriarchy hurts men too. And it's just really time for all of us to be free. And so that actually is my prayer for beyond the church as well.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
It was just a pleasure talking with you. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks.
Beth Allison Barr is a professor of medieval history at Baylor University, and her book is called The Making of Biblical Womanhood: How the Subjugation of Women Became Gospel Truth.